The Argentines say that British warships have been spotted near the island of South Georgia, which is nearly 1,000 miles from the Falklands. Argentina has protested to the OAS, and an Argentine diplomat in Washington is quoted as saying that the development demonstrates British intent of a possible imminent attack. The British Foreign Secretary, Mr. Pym, is returning to London from Washington with a new American plan to try to settle the Falklands crisis. But there's apparently considerable doubt in Washington that it will satisfy the British government. The Labour Party spokesman on foreign affairs, Mr. Healey, has said Britain should propose a role for the United Nations in settling the Falklands dispute. Mr. Healey was speaking after discussions in New York with the United Nations Secretary General, Mr. Perez de Cuellar. He said if American attempts at mediation failed, then the UN should be asked to take over that role. Mr. Healey said the United Nations ought to take over temporary administration of the islands once Argentina withdrew, pending a negotiated settlement. Here in London, the Prime Minister, Mrs. Thatcher, has paid a two-hour visit to the Royal Navy's headquarters at Northwood. She was given a full briefing by the Commander-in-Chief of the Fleet, Sir John Fieldhouse, who is in overall charge of the Naval Task Force heading towards the Falkland Islands. The Prime Minister was told that the force is on course, on time, and that the crews are on defence alert. This involves half the ship's company being on duty all the time, with the others fully ready for action. There have been further calls for an inquiry into the government's handling of events leading up to the Argentine invasion of the Falkland Islands. The Liberal leader, Mr. Steele, said a full investigation must begin once the crisis has passed. He said the government's culpability was unlikely to end with the resignation of Lord Carrington. Mr. Richard Luce, one of the Foreign Office ministers who resigned together with Lord Carrington, said the review promised by Mrs. Thatcher should be set up once the immediate crisis was over. It should cover all government departments concerned.
BBC World Service. From the Weeklies, presented by Mike Popham. This week, the crisis in the Falklands between Britain and Argentina continues to preoccupy the Weeklies. The Economist says that from the day Argentina took the Falkland Islands by force on April the 2nd, there appeared to be a choice between war and concession. Now again, there seems to be a choice over the Falklands.
This time, it is between war and compromise. Again, we differ from some of our friends in British opinion. There is no choice yet. There should begin to be in the next week or so. But there is no call for compromise yet, only unflinching negotiations while the fleet sails on. Whither? For a start, the British fleet needs to do whatever the military commanders say is possible with lightly defended South Georgia, which lies beyond Argentine air cover, 1,700 miles from Comodoro Rivadavia. Then it needs to deploy east of or around the Falklands, again depending on military assessment. It might add a selective, deliberately sporadic, and unpredictable air exclusion zone to the present fairly predictable submarine, and then prepare to cripple Port Stanley Airport. That might be a position from which to negotiate for compromise. The present 50-vessel ribbon of assorted British shipping strung out between South Georgia and the coast of West Africa is not.
The Economist concedes that Argentina's alleged offer to withdraw its forces from the Falklands is progress.
But so hedged is the undertaking that it would be hard to accept it as it stands. The withdrawal would be only gently phased, according to some Argentine generals' desires. A lot of suggestive equipment might be left in place. Some of the soldiers might call themselves civilians and be the advance guard for other Argentines coming to settle, to buy land, to swamp the existing Britons. Could a fleet turn back on the basis of such a withdrawal? Argentina's negotiating history with Chile has been one of border pledges and arbitrations made but then not respected. During this negotiation over the Falklands, there has been uncertainty each morning whether the ideas embraced the previous evening had fallen out of bed again during the night.
After withdrawal, all parties agree, says The Economist, that there must be an interim administration of the islands, while a long-term solution is negotiated.
The Argentines and the Americans had one of their rare areas of agreement that this should take place under three flags. American, Argentine, and British. Argentina's blue and white has fluttered over Port Stanley's airport for years. But dispute remains over what matters. Who would choose a joint Argentine-British council, refereed by America? How it would be chosen and weighted? What the islanders' representation on it would be? Where the police force would come from? Since the islanders have been used to having only two policemen, Argentina's demand to choose part of the police force is one of the grimmest signs yet of its wish to bring in all the uncivilizing effects of over-government.
In Argentina's view, The Economist writes, the interim period should end abruptly at the end of 1982.
During the months till then, a negotiation would take place under the umbrella of the United Nations. But Mr. Haig clearly failed to warn the Argentines off from trying to word the document so that it assumed the outcome of this negotiation would be fixed in their favor in advance, or from watering down the priority which in various formulations Mrs. Thatcher and her foreign secretary have unguardedly given to the wishes of the Falklanders.
And The Economist concludes,
Mrs. Thatcher has in our view little alternative than to wade past those who want her to hesitate with her fleet, past those who wanted to abandon what will now become a Washington negotiation, past those who wanted instead quickly to seek a negotiation through the United Nations in New York, and all those other panacea bringers of goodwill. She needs to keep on sailing, preparing to fight, and to keep on negotiating. She needs to satisfy her splendid European partners, who have little cause to love her, yet responded to Britain's call promptly, that she is doing both in earnest. She needs to be every bit as resolute as American public opinion thinks she is, and as President Reagan isn't. If she does these things, her moment to judge whether she should compromise and on what will come. It has not come yet.
That was The Economist. According to Bruce Page, editor of The New Statesman, the Falklands crisis exposes once again the Labour opposition's incapacity to think seriously about Britain's military needs and responsibilities. As ever, the party oscillates between a rhetoric of pacifism and a de facto acceptance of Whitehall's imperial menaces.
Britain urgently needs a defence policy attuned to its status as a medium-sized European industrial society. Not only our own peace, but probably the peace of Europe, depends on our getting this issue approximately right. Twice this century, the fatal ambiguity and incompetence of British military policy has decisively assisted in the process of turning crisis into catastrophe. After 1914 and 1940, a third blunder is likely to be terminal. Although trivial in itself, the Falklands episode reveals that the reflexes which inhibit the development of rational policy and which support continuing delusions of global power, are deeply embedded in British society, infecting the left as well as the blimpish right.
That was Bruce Page, editor of The New Statesman. The Guardian Weekly says that if there is to be a peaceful solution to the Falklands crisis, Mrs. Thatcher will have to compromise.
Long ago, in the mists of empire, when we used habitually to dispatch fleets and gunboats, such thoughts of compromise would have been briskly banished. Mrs. Thatcher, one may guess, would dearly love to banish them. But the trouble with the Falklands is that principle and reality continually tug against each other. The principle is that the islands belong to Britain and cannot be taken from us by force. The reality, over three decades, is that we've been prepared to trade away the essentials of sovereignty because we know that we have no use for them and because we know that we cannot consistently defend the people who live on the Falklands.
If Britain were to regain Port Stanley by force, writes The Guardian Weekly, would the British government then decline to negotiate about sovereignty for another 150 years, backing up that refusal by heavy naval and troop deployments in the South Atlantic?
Frankly, no. What is more, this British government, even if it so wished, cannot bind its successors to offer the Falklanders credible defence. The economic realities, which over 20 years have left the island airstrip unlengthened and encouraged Argentinian boats and planes to provide the only regular services, cannot be overturned by a few bold front-bench assertions at Westminster or by a clatter of backbench rhetoric. They remain. And with them remains the necessity, eventually, to strike a sovereignty deal with Buenos Aires. So the question is not whether, but when. Next month, or next year, or sometime in the next decade. And in that light, A resort to task force invasion or aerial blockade looks out of balance. People die in a shooting war. Politicians lose control of events. Friends who offered support for negotiation will sidle away in disbelief. UN resolutions will work against Britain. Westminster opinion will fatally fragment.
And where does the United States stand in all this? Asked the Guardian Weekly.
Mr. Haig, plunging incessantly across the globe, bearing new ideas and growing anxieties, has received due Whitehall praise for energy and persistence. But the administration he represents is taking flak, both in Britain and America. To some extent, that is predictable, and a touch unfair. Mr. Haig is the man in the middle, and as his State Department spokesman remarks, we had no idea of doing anything but walking right down the middle. For as long as a public middle way remains, then Mr. Haig has to cleave to it.
Understood.
But for many in London, and more than a few in Washington, the middle way cannot hold if mediation ultimately fails. Then, America must not merely line up behind UN Resolution 502, but tell General Galtieri that he is dead wrong. A situation implying action beyond telephonic beseechings from the Oval Office.
That was the Guardian Weekly. In turning down the opposition Labour Party's suggestion that the United Nations should now be brought into the Falkland Islands dispute, Tribune thinks Mrs. Thatcher has clearly shown that she's more keen to save her own political skin than to achieve a reasonable settlement.
The fact remains, however, that the only way now that the future of the Falkland Islanders can be secured is through international action.
Whatever further pressures the threat of force may put on the Argentine regime, it can only unite other countries in pushing Britain towards a diplomatic settlement. By depending alone on Mr. Haig's good offices, the Prime Minister has locked herself and the Falkland Islanders into America's problems in trying to balance its own interests against those of Argentina and Britain. No one should now doubt that while the American administration may have some sympathy with British opposition to Argentine aggression, the possible fall of President Leopoldo Galtieri, the leader of the Argentine junta, weighs heavily in the balance.
Tribune points out that Britain started off with the advantage of considerable backing at the United Nations.
Resolution 502, which condemned the invasion of the Falkland Islands, asked for a peaceful settlement of the dispute. But that advantage was not followed up, owing to the fact that the British government misread America's position almost as badly as it had misread the aggressive intentions of the Argentine junta 2 months ago. While it seemed obvious that the Americans would put pressure on the Argentine, there was no way in which that pressure could flatly return complete sovereignty of the islands to Britain. Margaret Thatcher now turns down Haig's suggestion, endorsed by the Argentine junta, that a tripartite administration runs the island until the sovereignty question is settled by the end of this year. That proposal is not really new, since Mr. Haig brought that to London last week. What was new was the pressure on Mrs. Thatcher within the Tory party for a face-saving formula, which would please her hard-line right-wingers. They realized that something along those lines, without American participation, was being negotiated in the bilateral talks which had been going on between Britain and the Argentine a few months ago.
Tribune says the hardliners have pushed Mrs. Thatcher away from that compromise, and she's now falling back on the principle that the Falkland Islanders should have the last say on what becomes of them before any deal is struck.
As Tribune pointed out at the very start of the crisis, the interests of the Falkland Islanders themselves could only be protected by some form of UN intervention. While Argentine aggression had to be rejected, the changed circumstances made it obvious that neither Britain nor the Argentine could be left in sole charge.
What now must also be called into question, says Tribune, is the eventual use of the Royal Navy task force in the South Atlantic.
It could be put into deadly peril if Mrs. Thatcher loses further control and decides, as President Reagan suggested in his much-publicized private conversations with his Secretary of State, Alexander Haig, to have a small confrontation. Although we believe that Francis Pym will promise no precipitate action in Washington, the fleet is now in a position where the smallest spark could start a conflagration.
That was from Tribune.
In a lighter vein,
Alexander Chancellor, the editor of The Spectator, has just returned from holiday in Italy and says the news of Britain's showdown with Argentina over the Falklands reached him only in dribs and drabs.
First, I learnt in the village that we were at war.
This was disturbing news for someone who had just arrived on holiday, so I started buying the Italian newspapers. From these, I was pleased to discover that if there was to be a war, it would not begin until my holiday was over, given the length of time which the British fleet was planning to employ getting to the Falklands.
Chancellor says the Italians, despite the fact that half Argentina is of Italian origin, seem to be securely on the side of the British, and were rather surprised that he wasn't taking the first plane home.
I read with some sorrow of the resignation of Lord Carrington, who was described in Le Monde, which I read on the drive home, as exquisite. I then read an Italian newspaper report of Mr. Francis Pym's first intervention as Foreign Secretary in the House of Commons, under the headline, Britain Does Not Appease Dictators. This was an appealing line for the Italians, whose support for Britain seemed to a great extent determined by their dislike of Argentina's dictatorial government.
But even before the editor of The Spectator returned to London and discovered how often politicians in Britain had been emphasizing the fascism of General Galtieri as grounds for taking a strong line, he said he felt there was something wrong.
It is entirely irrelevant whether General Galtieri is a dictator or not. If Britain does not appease dictators, there is any number of countries with which we ought to be at war. As it is, we would welcome the support of any government, dictatorial or not, that decided to take our side in the present dispute. General Galtieri's offence, as far as Britain and the rest of the world are concerned, is not that he is a dictator, but that his government, with apparently the full support of its population, has committed an illegal act of aggression. That alone is why we may be obliged to fight the Argentinians. But it is desperately to be hoped that it still will not come to that.
And that final comment was from Alexander Chancellor, editor of The Spectator.
From the Weeklies was presented by Mike Popham.
The readers were James Varden
and Brian Emperor.
A reminder that our next World News from London is on the air in half an hour from now, that's at 08 hours Greenwich Mean Time, when it'll be followed by Reflections. So if you can listen to us then, next World News at 08 hours.
Transmission on this frequency is now closing. BBC World Service continues for North and Central America on 9.51 megahertz in the 31 meter band.